Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm here. I am here to talk about the wrestling. That is how I am today. How are you?
I am stressed. I'm very stressed. Yep. I'm moving this weekend, and like I went to pick up the keys yesterday, and like there was a couple of things when I went to this new flat. I mean, I don't think they technically should have let me do a viewing, but I'm glad they did. So mm-hmm. I did like a socially distant viewing, and in the kitchen there's like a separate like freezer and fridge, like small freezer and fridge, which is fine.
Okay.
And the freezer was like really thawed, so it was just like loads of like ice like over a whole compartment and all that. And I said, well, that's gonna have to be fixed by the time I move in. So yesterday when I got the keys, I didn't think to look at that again. And then the guy was like, here's your keys. We've done the inventory, but the inventory will be over to you on Monday. I thought, that's fine, no problem. And then he leaves, and the freezer's worse than before. But they're replacing it, but I just don't know when they're going to replace it by. So, I mean, this is not a big problem, but, like, where am I going to put my frozen food on Monday?
Right.
But, you know, if that's the biggest
problem.
Because
when do you have to be out of your old place?
Tuesday morning at latest. But everything's going to be out here by Monday. But, yeah, it's just trying to... I have so much stuff that it takes 3 to 4 days because, mm-hmm. yeah, so we're basically trying to move everything out, and then on Monday, removal guys come and they do the sofas and the bed and stuff like that.
The big, large things that you can't, like, take on a train.
Which have to be taken through the front window because my flat is too narrow to have furniture go through the front door.
I remember you getting the couch into that place, right? Wasn't that
mm-hmm.
the whole situation?
Yeah. So it's a whole thing. But yeah, apart from that, I'm good. It's Saturday night. Steve Gunn's off for 2 weeks after tonight, so he's very happy.
Oh, that'll be good. Are you guys doing anything or just enjoying your new digs?
Just enjoying the new digs. So he's not had like time off since like September or October.
Right.
So I think he's like so checked out. So
he might just be in a coma for a week, and that's probably okay, honestly.
That's how he usually is. So it's it's just more of that. But anyway, we're here to talk about wrestling. Obviously, AEW and NXT happened on Wednesday. We'll go into those shows later. I didn't think either of them were like the biggest shows they've ever done. They were good, but I don't really hear a lot of people talking about the shows this week, which I thought was...
I don't know. I enjoyed both shows, but I don't know that there was anything... There wasn't like a monumental moment, I guess. Like, because we've had on AEW recently, you've had some moments that you're like, oh my gosh, FTR here, like... Oh my gosh, Mike Tyson is here for some reason that I can't really explain.
I mean, and
why
we should
doing that?
We should give AEW a little bit of a reprieve because obviously some of the stuff that they'd had advertised, they weren't able to deliver. Sammy Guevara because of obviously his suspension, and the Natural Nightmares because QT Marshall potentially has COVID. Or mm-hmm. I can't remember if he does have it.
He needs to be tested for COVID because he came into contact with someone who had it, I believe, is the story. Or came into contact with someone who came into contact with someone who had it. I don't know what the tracing is, but there is reason to believe that he might have come into contact with somebody and needs to be tested for it. And did the responsible thing and stayed home, right? Which is good. And I appreciated the tweets from Tony Khan talking about John Moxley and talking about QT Marshall and saying it is the responsible thing to let us know and being very transparent about the fact that they had come into contact with someone. Obviously, John Moxley being in contact with Renee Young because she is his wife, so obviously that makes sense. I appreciate AEW's handling of the situation in exactly the way that I'm really frustrated with WWE's handling of the situation, which I'm sure is something that we're going to get into.
Well, let's just go into COVID now. Let's go into COVID to start with. So obviously we'd heard rumblings of stuff in terms of how WWE were testing people or not testing people and all that kind of stuff. And there's, you know, if you follow...
They weren't testing people. They were doing temperature checks.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is there was rumblings that there was tests. There was rumblings that there wasn't tests. So we didn't really know what was going on. But if you follow a lot of the kind of, you know, good journalists on social media, like Sean Ross Sapp or Alex McCarthy, Gary Cassidy, Dave Meltzer, Mike Johnson, all those people, they've been kind of getting people on the inside to talk and stuff. And the gist of it is, when Renee Young went public with her saying that she's got COVID, I think it's her, Adam Pearce, Jamie Noble, Kayla Braxton, who has it for a second time, that essentially, I mean, I think, because there's been a bunch, we've not really talked about it on the podcast because it's just not really been anything that I thought we could add to, but there's been like a bunch of tapings that were like cancelled or postponed because testing needed to be done. But I think the problem is that if you look at someone like Renee Young, she was tested, in inverted commas, at the building in at the performance center, and she tested negative. But then she went home and she didn't feel well, and she got a coronavirus test there, and she tested positive at home. So the problem now is you don't know how many people have got it, and it's probably at least a dozen, if not more, which kind of spells trouble. But then I guess there's this weird thing, I'm not trying to justify it, I'm just trying to find what the thought process is behind it.
Yeah.
And I guess the idea is that there are some people in America who just think COVID is nothing to worry about, and, you know, we just need to get stuff back to normal. And I feel like that's what's maybe going on here. But the problem is that there was a great clip on The View that you can watch on YouTube, actually, if you just go and search for The View's YouTube channel. And it was like a bunch of residents in Palm Beach in Florida, because they're now being told they have to mandatorily wear face masks.
Right.
And there are some very interesting people who come up to the like local community tannoy thing to talk about it. And one woman, my favourite, she went, "You're trying to suppress God's breath that he gave us." I'm like, what? Or like, you know, this is a conspiracy. There was one woman who said, "I'm a doctor and I don't believe your degrees." And like, this is not a political thing. This is just like, COVID's real. It can kill people. You should just take precautions. And
literally a public health crisis. Literally, there is an easy thing we can do to help curb a public health crisis. And some people are just railing against it. I mean, there are people that I know in my personal life who believe it's a hoax, or who just don't believe the media. Like, they're just so angry at the media, and they think the media has created COVID or something like that, despite having people in our friendship circle who had coronavirus and it was miserable, and we read their experiences with it and it was miserable, right? And still have lasting effects, like not being able to taste and smell after months. So it's very frustrating to me to see some of these things, and to see it from some people that I know personally, who are just like, "I'm not wearing a mask and you're infringing on my liberty." But I think it's just, it's a lot of American culture to be very individualistic and to think, "Oh, well, if the mask isn't going to protect me from getting sick, then why would I wear it?" Like,
I think that
thinking that if everyone just does this together, then it's going to be better. But
I think there is an element sometimes, and I do understand this in some ways, that like, that, you know, if you think about the amount of news that we have consumed in the last 3 months and how many changes that have, like, it's very difficult to keep up with what the next thing is that we're getting told. But the basics are essentially the same, which is that it gets passed by, you know, the things in your mouth, the, I don't know what it was called again, not auxins,
respiratory droplets.
Respiratory droplets. They're what pass it. But I mean, you know, now AEW have handled it a lot better in terms of the testing. Everybody's tested. You have to get the armband when you come in. Because WWE, I think it was last week, the week before, they were allowing friends and family in, but the friends and family weren't allowed to wear masks. But I mean, so AEW have been really good with kind of making sure, like you say, with Moxley, that, like, you know, he's out right now. Like, that's it. He can't be there. But at the same time,
they're not going to try and, like, have him be at Fyter Fest if, you know, if he tests positive, obviously, then he's not going to be there. But they want to have him be quarantined, be tested, all that kind of stuff.
But
before
to be
that, I mean, his wife has it, so the chances of him getting it are pretty high.
The one thing to note, though, is that when I was watching Dynamite this week, and there's that, you know, the thing at the end with Jericho and Orange Cassidy, there was a lot of people close together in that crowd with no masks on.
Yeah,
so,
there were.
Like, even there, it's like, you need to... You're doing a lot of good stuff, but you need to do more stuff like that. And I think
the optics of that aren't great. I think their theory is because they are testing everyone, and because they're being a lot more careful about who gets into that building and how long they stay in that building. Like, once you're in, you know, you can't leave. So I think that they figure that having that many people close together isn't going to be as much of a problem. But still, I mean, the tests aren't 100%. So it seems like distancing would still be in everyone's better interest.
And the other thing, like, this is going to make me sound like I'm downplaying COVID, and I'm not. But I think that this is one of the mindsets. You can absolutely put together whose mindset this is. But I think the mindset is that, like, the majority of people who get COVID are fine in the end. So, mm-hmm. like, it's not a big problem. But the issue with that is that there are people who will not be fine if they get it. And there's people, you know, there's WWE roster members who are not coming to work anymore because they just are not interested and put themselves at risk. I think if I was trying to think about it before because I knew we would be talking about this. If I was a WWE wrestler, I think I would still have gone to work up until probably last week. And I think last week, if I found out that there was, like, people coming in who weren't getting tested but then were also just going to be sitting without masks and stuff and starting to hear that people in the company had it and stuff, that's when I would probably, you know, say I'm out. And I'm mm-hmm. probably far more lenient than a lot of people would be. So I think that you're going to see now they either have to really get stuff in place. I mean, I know Tony Khan and AEW have got a lot of coronavirus tests. Are WWE able to get them? I assume they are. Like,
I would assume so. I mean, everyone's in Florida, right? So they're kind of in, I mean, not exactly the same area, but I don't know how a lot of that stuff works, so I can't really speak on it. But I guess the image that WWE is portraying is very different to the image that AEW is portraying in terms of, like, AEW seems to want to be open and transparent about what they're doing, right? They said on commentary on Dynamite that Jon Moxley was not there because he came into contact with someone with coronavirus and needs to be tested and he's going to be out. And they've been very direct about that. I believe they mentioned the same thing with QT Marshall. Like, that is the reason that he is not on the show, is because they are worried about coronavirus tracing and he needs to be tested before they're going to have him, you know, there in the building. That transparency I appreciate a lot, just because WWE seems to want to still ignore the fact that this is going on. Like, they still seem to want to just paint a veneer of happy, shiny wrestling. Like, everything's fine. Like, the world isn't on fucking fire. Like, everyone knows that the world's on fucking fire right now, right? Like, it's not a secret. And watching the shows, it's very evident because it looks different to any of the wrestling that we've watched for the past however many years. So it just seems like still putting on the happy face and pretending that everything's fine is just, it makes it worse to me. Like, it makes me feel worse WWE, and, like,
I think it's
there,
like,
is no love lost between me and, like, that company, but, like, it's very frustrating, you know what I mean? Like, just be honest with people. We're not children.
Well, it's like the way that I would, I mean, it's a different thing, but I remember when I used to work in TV, and, like, I hated when we had to do, like, we would build to, I'd be a researcher on a quiz show or something, and we would work, like, 5 weeks, 9 to 5, and then we would have to do these mm-hmm. obscenely long shifts in the studio, and I hated doing them. And I had two different managers each year that I did it. And the first year I did it, the manager basically, like, was like, this is shit. I know it's shit, but let's just do it. And I appreciated that, and that worked more for me. The next year, mm-hmm. the girl was like, this is your job. You need to do this. And I didn't respond to that. And I feel like with coronavirus, it's like, I respond better to hearing people discuss it, like JR and Tony Schiavone and Excalibur discuss it, rather than, like, on WWE, like, they mildly allude that something is going on, but they don't talk about it. And I think if they did talk about it, they would just feel more real. And I think that's something that would be good.
It's just, I mean, I know that wrestling obviously is all about putting up a false front, right? Like, literally what wrestling is. And I love that about wrestling. I love that there's a false front. But at the same time, if you're trying to reach an audience and you just come across so false, like, everything they're saying just comes across so false, because they're not, like, mention the word COVID, mention the word coronavirus. It's not going to kill you, you know, like, it's mentioning the word is not going to make it worse or whatever. It seems to be like they want to ignore the problem because they don't like that it's there. And I think that's a lot of people's problems with, like, wearing masks in public and that kind of stuff. Like, they don't want to admit that this problem is so pervasive because it is uncomfortable and it sucks. But if you don't admit that the problem's there and you just ignore it, then you get into a situation where you have an outbreak on your roster and it's not good. Like, none of this is good.
It is not good. Well, there's lots of other news to talk about. Another thing to bring up is Velveteen Dream. And a couple of sources have basically said that he's on his way out of the company and that they're going to be getting rid of him or releasing him. He was also in a car accident last night. Hope he's obviously all right. But
he was? Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, look, again, there's been accusations. I don't want to say, I don't want to crucify him, but there's accusations there, so they need to be talked about as well, obviously. It does feel like Velveteen Dream, like it's done. It's the experiment is done. Like he was, everybody loved him, and then the first allegation thing came out that we thought was nothing. Now more have come out. Couple that with his character not really working on TV. It just kind of feels like he is not the guy that 18 months ago John Cena was saying he should main event at WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's crazy because like a lot of the character stuff has to do with like treating women grossly and that kind of thing. And like I don't want to conflate his character with any of the accusations. They're not the same thing. They're two separate things. But it hasn't really seemed to be clicking. And I'd been wondering if it was just me, like television wise, if he just wasn't clicking for me or if he wasn't clicking for other people. And it seems to be that he's just not clicking for everyone right now. And it's crazy because he did seem to be the guy who was can't miss, right? Like he seemed to be the guy who was going to be the next big thing. And I mean, if the allegations about him are true, then fuck that guy and he should be out. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know him personally, but I haven't read a lot of the allegations about him specifically. I did see the tweets last night about him potentially being on his way out of the company. I feel like he's going to be one of those guys that like you look back on lists and you go like, oh, who did you think was the next big thing and then just wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And who knows? Like he's still young, so who knows what's going to happen in future for him because he's still in his 20s, right?
Yeah, he's like 25, I think. The thing that's really sad about it is that like he was, to me anyway, he was the first real chance of a person of color legitimately getting to the main event and like be at a top star. Because you know sometimes it's like, well, what about this guy? And you're like, oh, that white guy wasn't really. Like he wasn't really going to be a main event player, but you know, you wanted him to be because you want that diversity and you want people of color to be represented as well. And he was the ideal guy, and it really sucks that he seems to not be as ideal as we'd hoped he would be. But yeah, and speaking of the allegations, I'm segueing all over the place, Sandra.
There's a lot going on, I understand.
WWE have released Legato, they've released Travis Banks, obviously they've released Jack Gallagher before. There's now a report on Sportskeeda that they are going to essentially shut down the NXT UK brand,
Really?
which I just don't see a way back for that brand, really, because if you there's a lot of people in that brand who have been accused, whether, you know, let those trials go as they go kind of thing, but Jordan Devlin, Joe Coffey, Travis Banks, Legato. I'm sure I saw an accusation about one or both of Mustache Mountain. So, yeah, it just seems like, what do you do with that? What do you do with that brand now? And in some ways, maybe like they've maybe wanted to get rid of it, and this is the way to get rid of it. I mean, do you think NXT UK is something that would be missed if it went away, or is it something where it's kind of, you know, it might be a good show, but there's too much else to watch?
I mean, it's not something that I'm going to miss personally because it's not something that I personally was watching. I think it sucks for the performers who are employed there to just suddenly lose their jobs and not have, you know, like, I mean, a lot of people are depending on that work and that money from WWE. So, like, I don't know. I'm not really that personally tied to it, I guess, just because it's not a show that I was watching. But I think it sucks. And I think NXT UK had a place. Like I'm not in the UK, so I can't really speak to that, right? Like I don't know how popular it was in the UK. I don't know how popular it was to be able to see your favorite performers on a WWE brand show. I know their takeovers were always super fun. Every time I watched the television, I enjoyed it because I enjoy the wrestlers there. I don't know. Like maybe WWE feels like they are just kind of too bloated with content at this point, but at the same time, they seem to want to take over the world and have an empire. And if you want to take over the world and have an empire, there's going to be a lot of content that people aren't necessarily watching, right? Like I haven't watched 205 Live in a long time. I think it's still happening. And good for the people that are working there, right? So I don't know. Like it's not something that I'm personally like super gutted about, except for I just feel bad gonna lose their jobs over it.
Yeah,
Like, do you think that they'll shuffle some of them into like just regular NXT or onto the main roster or 205 Live? Or do you think they're just going to be done?
it feels like some of the top names would get a chance to go to NXT in the US, but I mean, I just don't know what you do with everybody else. So it sucks for those people, like you say, that have got a job and got an income coming in, but with the whole scandal, it feels a
Well, I mean,
big wound.
it really started gaining steam in British wrestling, right? Like, that's where a lot of the allegations came from, and then it kind of spread to America and elsewhere. So
It would just
there
be
are the
very difficult to come back from this because
yeah.
I don't know what you would have to do or how much work you would need to put into the scene to, like, I can't imagine going to an NXT UK takeover and feeling the same way about it soon,
No.
you know?
Nor any UK indie at this point. I hope people like Kaylee Ray and Viper find like another spot within the company because I think they're so good, you know? And
Yeah, for sure. And then the other thing I was going to ask you before we get to the shows was Tessa Blanchard has been released from Impact, stripped of the title. She was supposed to send in some promos. She didn't. Do you think that based on her kind of attitude issues that we've heard about, do you think that stops her from going to a big company? Would you still like to see her go anywhere? Is there anywhere you would think she'd be a good fit?
I mean, if she's not willing to work with Impact and send them promos and travel, because she's living in Mexico, right, with Daga, so it makes sense that she wasn't traveling to tapings. But if she was unwilling to even send in promos to promote herself and promote the company, that doesn't really speak to her being easy to work with. Any of the allegations of bullying and racism and things that have come out in the past about her. So, I mean, from a wrestling perspective, would I like to see her in a major company? Of course, she's great. She's incredible. She's an incredible talent, you know? That Tessa Blanchard versus Charlotte Flair match, just being on the horizon and being a possibility somewhere, is enticing. It is. But if I were a major company, I would want to think twice or three times about hiring her because apparently things are very difficult to work with her, right? And if she's not even willing to do promotional materials that don't require her to travel, then it doesn't seem like she's going to want to play ball a whole lot, right? And I mean, she's a big name and she's very important, but she's not the biggest name and she's not the most important, and companies aren't going to live or die by her. So I don't know. Like, I would hope that there's something she can do or whatever, but I mean, if she's just difficult, she's just difficult. I don't know. Like, AEW could use her for sure in terms of building their women's division and having some star power and maybe telling some compelling stories. But
Maybe if her
if nobody
dad's
wants to work with
around,
her, then it's a problem. I mean, her, yeah,
would that make it
but
easier?
maybe. I mean, if someone, like, I don't know her personally, so I don't want to like disparage her or call her a monster or anything like that. But there is a history of her leaving companies and not working out and having attitude problems. And they, like, we'd heard that some of that had calmed down, but now Impact is firing her and stripping her of the belt. I mean, she was their champion and she was unwilling to do promos. That doesn't really speak very highly of her.
Because no matter what happened, whether there's a real reason behind it, it publicly will just kind of be spun as she's difficult, no matter what, which is a
And of
shame.
course, Impact is going to spin it that way. So, like, I mean, not knowing her and not knowing all of the situation, I don't just want to be like, she's horrible. Like, I don't want to be that way. But it seems like there's kind of a pattern with her too, you know, of not being able to like really work within a company structure.
Yeah, there seems to be. Well, I mean, she's so talented, you would hope that she can go somewhere where they could. I mean, she's young. You can get that stuff out of her. It's like there's people, because I'm sure Seth Rollins, people said he had issues when he came into NXT and they got it out of him, kind of thing. So,
Right.
well, let's move on to NXT. So, overall, what did you think of the show this week?
I liked it. I thought it was fun. It felt like it had a little bit more variety than NXT has had recently, and I think that started last week too with some of the sketches and Robert Stone kind of being a thread throughout the show and all that kind of stuff. So it feels like NXT has a little bit more life again, which I appreciate.
I really dug the Robert Stone stuff this week. Like,
It was great, wasn't it?
I'm very into the idea that if Rhea Ripley loses next week, that she has to join his brand. Like, there's just something about that that makes me laugh. And he like it's a hard thing. That gimmick is difficult to not just be shit. So he's doing a really good job to make it actually be entertaining.
He's great. And I'm glad that Aaliyah has joined with Robert Stone because that gives him, you know, it makes him not just like sad dude all over the place. Like, I don't know why Aaliyah would sign. I mean, I guess him puking in the ring last week did lead to her winning. I know a lot of people are so down on that. We talked about it last week. It doesn't bother me that much. It was gross, but whatever. I don't care that much. But yeah, I thought like his interactions with Rhea Ripley were kind of great. And it's giving Rhea Ripley something more to cling to, because I think since Rhea Ripley is not in the championship chase right now, she's said, you know, I am happy for Io. I am proud of her for being the champion. It seems like they're trying to move Rhea Ripley away from like being in title contention right now, which is probably a good idea, because you don't want Io Shirai to lose the belt right away, but you also don't want Rhea Ripley just like losing consistently, because Rhea Ripley's awesome, right? Like, she is awesome. So having her involved in this whole Robert Stone situation, where she's gonna fight Aaliyah again next week, and if she loses, she has to join the Robert Stone brand. Like, there's part of me that thinks she should absolutely win and not have to join the Robert Stone brand, but like, he keeps trying to recruit her in ways. If there are shenanigans and she loses and she has to join the brand, that could lead to some fun too. I'm kind of into it either way, just depending on how they tell the story. And I'm trying to trust in NXT the way that I always used to trust in NXT, to tell the story well and to have kind of an end goal in mind. But I think Rhea Ripley and Robert Stone should definitely be kind of like entwined for a long time. I think it's a really fun dynamic, and if more people can join the Robert Stone brand to like face off against Rhea Ripley or whatever, like it's I don't know, like it adds some variety, right? Like, this is why managers are fun.
Yeah, exactly. So, and AEW gets so many of them, there should be more in NXT. So Robert Stone, I'm kind of, whatever happens next week, I'm kind of willing to go along with the ride. So, and NXT's not had as much fun in the last while, so I'm glad there's a bit more fun on the show.
Yeah, I miss fun. I like fun.
Fun
I'm
is
pro fun.
Fun. How did the Undisputed Therapy segments work for you this week? Are you still digging it? Are you not?
I thought I liked it better this week than I liked it last week, actually. Last week, it was kind of like, all right, this is something you're trying. It's a little cringe. I don't know why Kyle O'Reilly's in disguise. And this week, we got the reveal that it was indeed Kyle O'Reilly in disguise, as if
dun, dun,
everyone
dun.
Couldn't tell that, but, you know, whatever. But yeah, I thought it was funny them, like, discovering that it was Kyle O'Reilly the whole time, and then going to the trunk, and Roderick Strong gets into the trunk, and he's like, I did it, I got in the trunk. All that was pretty fun, I thought. I thought it, you know what it feels like? Is it feels a lot like DX shenanigans to me. But
yeah,
like,
I get that.
The good kind of DX shenanigans that people liked, like the tank and the, I don't know, other stuff that they did that people find fun, that I find annoying because they've been in so many video clips. But you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what this feels like, is just DX shenanigans, where it's not necessarily them all wrestling in matches, but they're having some bonkers stuff backstage, and no one was in blackface and no one got called a slut. So like, really, that's a win.
But that's a high bar to set. You know, I dug it. I think it's fun. It's the Undisputed Era. People love the catchphrase. They love the theme tune. But to now give them another layer to the bow, I think is good. Like, I think it's just...
Honestly,
and it is cringe.
Who would have thought that Roderick Strong would be the most fun member of Undisputed Era right now? But he is.
I did not see that being where my life would lead. But that seems to be it this week. And I think Dexter Lumis is still working. They're really selling for him, to make him feel as sort of creepy as fuck as he is, which I think
helps.
Yeah,
they make him feel like a big deal when he's all like creepy serial killer. Mr. Sondra actually wants like a video of Dexter Lumis and Steve Austin doing like a mirror thing where they're like opposite sides of a mirror because they look the same, which I'm here for. I think it'd be great. But yeah, like I think the whole Undisputed Era Dexter Lumis situation is something that I didn't envision needing in my life, but it's made Undisputed Era feel a lot more interesting to me, because for a long time they were just like the dudes with the belts and they were on top, and they felt like DX when DX were trying to pop themselves backstage, and none of it was really that funny. Like, okay, I see that you guys are having fun, but there's nothing really to go off of here, right? This is more like DX when they have a foil against them, and you know, like they're trying to run from Kane or something like that.
Yeah, no, it definitely works. But obviously the main event this week, the big thing we were building to, was Keith Lee, Finn Balor, and Johnny Gargano, and it was fucking great. It was so fun.
So great.
Like, so fun. And in the match, as it was going on, I really realized that Keith Lee is my fave. Like, I just wanted him to win so badly, but the idea of him not winning was just too much to handle. So yeah, I thought this was great, and they really did a good job of making you believe that Gargano or Balor could get it. Which is hard to do in like 12 minutes, but they did it.
And they did it without making Keith Lee look like less of a monster, Right? Like, I think the match was just laid out so cleverly that when Keith Lee was taken out, it was kind of like both of them took him out, or you believed it. It wasn't just like the big dude is useless, right? Like, everything made sense. They're all so good at their jobs. This is not a surprise that they did very, very well to wrestle, but they are so good at their jobs and they wrestled so well, and the triple threat was laid out so well. And triple threats like that are not easy to pull off without like just one person napping on the outside for a long time and whatnot. I think NXT has actually done really well with triple threats lately because those are hard matches, like hard to get timing right, hard to figure out who goes where, hard to make someone look hard to make everyone look good, I would say. And I think this match did make everyone look good. Like, in Keith Lee pinning Finn Balor, I was like, wow, that feels like a really big deal, because Finn Balor's not just a former NXT champion, he's a former Universal champion, he was main roster dude, like, he's Finn Balor, right? And Keith Lee pinning Finn Balor didn't make Finn Balor feel like nothing. It made Keith Lee feel like a big monster man who absolutely deserves to face Adam Cole for winner takes all, which really makes me cringe and makes me nervous. Don't really want it.
I mean,
But
I
Keith Lee
definitely,
versus Adam Cole should be great.
yeah, I definitely felt that out of the three, Keith Lee versus Adam Cole was the match that I wanted out of
Yeah,
Balor and
same.
Cole or Gargano and Cole. I mean, I never need to see Gargano and Cole ever again in my life. We know this about my
We
opinions on
know
that.
this,
But
yes.
yeah,
But
and
Balor and Cole could have been all right.
yeah, but Keith Lee and Adam Cole's where it's at. And obviously, Adam Cole
Yes,
comes out. They
absolutely.
have the face off. I mean, I still think, you know, we saw Karrion Kross on this show kind of destroying Bronson Reed. I think he's getting involved and we're getting a kind of non-finish. That is my gut feeling. Do you get a gut feeling of that, or do you think somebody is going to walk away with both belts next week?
I hope that we have interference and no one walks away with both belts next week. I hope. Haven't we done this before? Didn't they do this before where they were going to combine them and then they didn't?
The last combined I remember is Orton and Cena in 2013.
I'm thinking specifically with the NXT and North American Championships. I want to say there was like a champion versus champion match, and then it ended in a not finish. And maybe I'm making that up in my head. I don't know. But I feel like we've been here before. And I don't want the belts to be combined at all. Like, I do not. So I'm hoping that Karrion Kross gets involved. It seems like Karrion Kross is the dude, right? Like, they are pushing him to the moon, and they should. He's great. I really like him, and I like Scarlett, and I like their act. I want to give props to NXT for just how many women's segments there were on the show. Like, the tag with Kacy Catanzaro and Kayden Carr versus Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez, I thought was great. Really fun to see Kacy Catanzaro do her thing, because I think she's real good. And obviously she's still new, but I enjoyed seeing it. And you have Scarlett on the show, and she's a valet, and she's a different part of female representation. And you have Rhea Ripley and Aaliyah, easy for me to say, and they have a story going on. And like, Io Shirai, I don't even think was on this show, was she?
She wasn't, yeah. Even without her, there was still multiple women's
And I didn't
stories.
like, it's not that I didn't miss her because she doesn't matter, but it was okay to take a week off of having Io Shirai on the show, because that she matters and that she's the champion, and there's just so much other stuff going on. You had the Candice LeRae video package too, to be like, I am Candice LeRae and I'm gonna rule this division. You had the Mercedes Martinez video packages hyping up her return slash debut slash why is she not in my life on a regular basis? I need her so badly. I love her. I don't know if everyone knows this, but I love her so much. But it just seems like NXT is really trying to flesh out their women's division a little bit more. And I appreciate that, because I like seeing characters like Aaliyah get something to do. I like seeing Kayden Carter and Kacy Catanzaro have something to do. Like, we've had Xia Li in matches and stuff, and she's still learning, she's still newer, but it feels like a fleshed out division. And there were just so many women's segments that it was really nice. It was really nice, and kind of the opposite of AEW when it comes to women's matches.
Well, speaking of AEW, I just didn't feel that this week's show was like great. It was decent, but like it just felt like it was missing a couple of big hitters. Like I really liked the opening match with Luchasaurus and Wardlow, with people and with all the lumberjacks on the outside. I thought that was fun. But like the
Luchasaurus and Wardlow was awesome.
yeah, that was
Like,
that
I
I really
really liked that match.
that was great. The rest of it was decent, but like I don't know, I just felt like there was something missing on the show. Maybe it's Moxley not on it, I don't know, but the
I
opening
think
match,
they did have to scramble to redo some stuff pretty last minute. So I think for what they had to deal with, I think they still put together a pretty great show. It still felt alive to me.
and Wardlow is someone who I did not think at this point I would be putting as much stock into it, because obviously he kind of had the match with Cody, he lost, we move on. But like, Wardlow's got some real potential.
He's real good. Real, real good. I mean, we know that I love Luchasaurus. We know that that's a thing.
And Jurassic Express are the best.
Jurassic Express are the best. You know, I might not love Luchasaurus quite as much as Jen loves Luchasaurus, because that kind of love just can't be touched. But I'm still a big old Luchasaurus fan, right? Like, he's amazing. And Wardlow, too. I think we just haven't gotten a chance to see Wardlow in ring all that much, because he's been MJF's bodyguard and he's just been kind of the big dude in the back. He had the match with Cody, which I thought was great. But getting to see this big hoss, big meaty men slapping meat fight at the beginning of the show, I was like, yes, please sign me up. Like, and it's a lumberjack match and they did a flip onto lumberjacks. And I'm just like, wow, this is a lot of big flipping happening. And I love big flipping, Kenny. I'm a big fan of it. So, yeah, this was incredibly up my alley. And Wardlow winning the match, I probably should have seen that coming, but like, my love for Luchasaurus is just like, well, he should be the guy who should be really important. And then he lost, and that made me sad. But at the same time, I'm like, ooh, this Wardlow is a big bad monster man, and I must pay attention to him.
And now we're going to get MJF and Wardlow against Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy at Fyter Fest. So we're going to get more of it.
Here for it.
I actually want to give a big compliment. I thought the Sunny Kiss and Joey Janela vignette was really fun. At the gas station. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fun. What did you make of their match with Brody Lee and Colt Cabana?
I really liked it. I am super into this Brody Lee Colt Cabana partnership, alliance, whatever you want to call it, friendship, recruitment, I don't know. I'm back on board with Dark Order, like 100%. So I apologize to people who, well, I don't apologize. I don't apologize
don't
for
apologize.
Liking the thing at all. I like it a lot. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea. It is 100% my cup of tea. And it makes me happy that Brody Lee seems to be kind of falling into cult leader status a little bit more, because he seems to be like actually going for cult leader thing and not just bad parody of Vince McMahon. And I think Colt Cabana actually has just been incredible in this role, where we always see him as Colt Cabana, who's funny, jolly, happy comedy wrestler dude, right? With like the best theme song. I love Colt Cabana's theme song. Can we play Colt Cabana's theme song at the end of the show? Because
sure.
I love his theme song. But I think his serious acting, where he's doubting himself, or where he wants to belong to something, and where Brody Lee is kind of manipulating him and being an effective cult leader, I'm really into this story. And I think Sunny Kiss and Joey Janela, it was interesting, because I think I said last week both of these teams really needed to win this, right? Because Joey Janela has been on kind of a journey of self-discovery too, and then his partnership with Sunny Kiss is very new, so you want them to win and you want them to kind of come out all guns a-blazing. And they didn't win this match because it was more about Brody Lee and Colt Cabana, but it does also make me want to see more from Sunny Kiss and Joey Janela, because I think their partnership is great. Like, I really, really want them to do well.
So I will start with a good thing. I like the Janela and Sunny Kiss partnership. I think it's good. I think Colt Cabana's acting is really bad, and that's what kind of is taking me out of it.
Really?
I think I was trying to put my finger on why it's not working for me as much, and I think, I could be wrong. I think that like Colt Cabana's playing this as if he was like at an indie show, and like there's the very obvious gag behind him and he's playing like it's not there. And I feel like he's kind of playing that here. And I don't buy his acting of it. With Brody Lee, I kind of feel like I needed more from him as a character, but like, you lost to Jon Moxley. What happened? Like, why are you recruiting Colt Cabana? I don't know. And I think this is we've talked about this before, about the idea that when people lose big matches, we need to feel the reaction of that. And we've not had it. I'm willing to see where it goes. I thought it was fine. Maybe it's because I'm not used to seeing Cabana serious. Maybe I'm giving him too much of a free pass. But I don't know. I thought Sunny Kiss and Joey Janela were much more believable together in the kind of gas station segment and the match than Brody Lee and Cabana was. Because it just didn't click for me. But maybe it's going to go somewhere good. So maybe it will click for me at some point.
I just really love the idea of comedy guy who's kind of down on his luck. Like,
I like the idea.
Being serious.
I
so
really
maybe
like
it's just
idea.
That I like the story so much. But I thought his acting was fine. I didn't think it was terrible.
I don't think it was terrible. I just didn't buy it. But then
he wasn't Natalia about the situation.
No, he was much better than Natalya or Lana.
Yes.
I also thought that FTR and SCU had a good match on the show. I think it's worth noting that.
They did. They had a really good match. And it's, as I was watching it, I thought, wow, like, remember when SCU were the champions? Because I barely do.
A long time
Right?
ago.
Like, doesn't it seem like eons ago? I mean, this company's not even been around for a year.
'Cause when did they win
And
them? October? I
I
think the
think
tag titles
so.
were in
Didn't,
October, yeah.
yeah, what weren't the tag belts on the premiere?
Yes, or around
In
that time,
October?
yeah.
Yeah, so it's crazy because like SCU are fine, they're good, like I like them, but I just kind of forget that they're there a lot of the time, and it's there are just other tag teams that are more prominent right now, like Best Friends, who have won my heart.
I do, even though I didn't think this show, I said earlier, I didn't think this show was a complete great show for me. I thought they did a really good job of building Fighter Fest with all the video packages and all the kind of stuff building that. So that's a plus point. The main event segment was obviously Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho. I thought they were really good together. I thought that Jericho kind of using a shoot element of like, I called the guys when they hired you and were like, why? Because that's probably what he did do. And they're bringing that into it. And
Well,
the idea.
that's pretty well known if you follow wrestling news and whatnot. Jericho said in interviews before that he had no idea why you would want an Orange Cassidy on your roster. Like, he didn't get it. And JR said the same thing too, right? Like, he was like, who is this dude who puts his hands in his pockets? Like, who, this is an affront to wrestling. So for Jericho to say that in his promo and say that I thought you were an insult to the business and I thought that, that they were crazy basically for hiring you, and now I get it and now I see it and take you seriously. I think it really worked. It was one of those times that a shoot promo actually does work and does bring in elements of reality and kind of makes you more invested in the story because it like the shoot element doesn't negate the story element, I guess. Like, they are entwined together.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this segment, because obviously we get Jericho doing the promo and eventually they start brawling through the crowd. I think this would have been like killer in front of a crowd. Like if this was in
Of
an arena,
course.
it would have been amazing. And there's a lot of AEW moments that I think really need a crowd, but they can't do it, so it is what it is. But by the end of it, I was into seeing Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho. Like I wanted to see it, so I think they were smart to sort of leave this be the last thing in the show because I think this was. With the opening of Wardlow and Luchasaurus, this was definitely the thing to close it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Orange Cassidy is incredible, and he is box office, and it warms my heart, especially this past week, where things are very bad. It warms my heart to see Orange Cassidy doing so well and to be highlighted for the incredible talent he is, because I think that he is proving his worth. And I think he is proving people like Chris Jericho, like JR, like whoever wrong, right? Like, he has come in and become one of the most important parts of AEW and become one of the most prominent people in AEW. And like, who knows how Fighter Fest is going to shake out? We might not have like a world title match, just depending on the Jon Moxley situation. But Chris Jericho versus Orange Cassidy feels like the main event, hands down, regardless of whether Jon Moxley is on that show or not, right?
Oh
Like, at
yeah,
least to
100%.
me, Chris Jericho versus Orange Cassidy seems like the blockbuster match. And I think it speaks to Jericho again, like his place in that company really can't be underrated because he's someone who is really bringing other stars up, right? Like, if Chris Jericho wanted to be a dick about everything and he wanted to keep everyone down and he wanted to just be the guy, he could because he's Chris Jericho and he could. But it seems like he's really come into this company and wants to work with younger talent and wants to elevate people who are already like getting traction behind them, and he wants to just kind of like light that explosion and set it on fire and be like, hey, let's make you into a mega star the way I'm a mega star because I'm Chris Jericho.
Yeah,
And it's
exactly.
working though. Like, I mean, Orange Cassidy feels like the biggest deal in the world, and a lot of that is down to Orange Cassidy being awesome. Like, I feel like I've been saying this for years. Orange Cassidy is awesome. Like, if you don't see it, then you need to see Orange Cassidy actually like perform because he's awesome. And it just makes me happy to see so many people getting to see that he's awesome and just kind of falling in love with him too.
On the overrun, we can talk more about Fighter Fest, and we can also talk about the Great American Bash that's coming back for 2 weeks. We will discuss that.
When is that? Is that the same
Yes, the
days?
same 2 days, same two
Of course
weeks.
it is. Of course it
But we
is.
will go into that a lot more. I know it's been a little bit shorter this week, but we have other stuff on. But we will be on the overrun tomorrow talking about Great American Bash and Fighter Fest and all that good stuff. Sondra, what are the plugs?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside underscore the Ropes. Find us on Instagram. I'm at Sandra Ruth. He is at MCINTOKNNY. Inside underscore the Ropes is on Instagram as well. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is tons of interview content, videos from our past live events that we used to be able to do back in the day, and other, I know, I just want to cry. But, you know, other stuff is going up too. Kenny's been doing interviews, conference calls, all sorts of good stuff going up on YouTube. So give us a like and a subscribe there. It really helps us out, algorithmically speaking. And like, you know, since we can't run live events, your YouTube views really do mean a lot. And what means the most to us, monetarily at least, and in terms of love, is patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you get bonus content from us. There will be an ITR overrun where we'll go into more of the Fighter Fest stuff. I want to talk about Haruka Shida and Penelope Ford, because I thought that was actually a pretty great angle on Dynamite this week. So we'll have more stuff over there. Retro ITR is available on Patreon as well. Actually, our King of the Ring 2000 episode, if you've missed it somehow, is available for free on Patreon. So if you want to hear some of our retro journey and hear some of the crazy delvings into the world of the year 2000 with Kenny, Finn Martin, and myself, then check that out. And if you are on the fence about subscribing to Retro ITR and you have just been like, no, I need a free sample before I'm going to spend my hard-earned money, I can appreciate that. Check out our free sample of King of the Ring 2000, because I think it was a pretty good show.
It was indeed. And here to play us out is Colt Cabana, and in his words, thanks. Bye, everybody.
Thanks. Bye. Boom, boom, Colt Cabana. Boom, boom, Colt Cabana. Boom, boom, Colt Cabana. It's Colt Cabana. Straight out of the shy, Mr. Shake and Bake, 45. Wrestling, cause he feels alive. Great memories and good times. Said no to corporate America. Give it up for your favorite character. Cabanarama with his head band on. Globetrotter from here to England. The money's back in the shy. He's gonna go to Maxwell Street. Get on his bad side, hit you with the flying apple, and you find yourself been beat. Said shimmy, shimmy, Cocoa Puff. Colts gonna wreck some stuff. Better bring it, he'll sling it. Everybody in the ring, just sing it, say.